Radio News Corps reports.
On December 7, 2004, President Bush signed into effect an omnibus appropriations bill containing a controversial amendment that imposes further sanctions on countries that have ratified the Rome Treaty of the International Criminal Court.
The Nethercutt Amendment was originally included in the House version of the U.S. Foreign Operations Appropriations Bill in July by U.S. Representative George Nethercutt, a Republican from Washington State.
Former Representative George Nethercutt's amendment suspends economic support fund assistance to states' parties to the International Criminal Court, or ICC, who have not signed bilateral immunity agreements with the U.S.
With a budget of over $2.5 billion, the economic support fund supports initiatives including peacekeeping, anti-terrorism measures, democracy building, and drug interdiction.
The revised language of the amendment allows presidential exemptions for NATO, major non-NATO allies, and Millennium Fund countries, that is to say, countries covered under another economic assistance program known as the Millennium Challenge Account.
The amendment reads, quote, limitation on economic support fund assistance for certain foreign governments that are parties to the International Criminal Court, Section 574. A, none of the funds made available in this act and Title II under the heading Economic Support Fund may be used to provide assistance to the government of a country that is a party to the International Criminal Court and has not entered into an agreement with the United States pursuant to Article 98 of the Rome Statute, preventing the International Criminal Court from proceeding against United States personnel present in such country.
B. The President may, without prior notice to Congress, waive the prohibition of subsection A with respect to a North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, member country, a major non-NATO ally, including Australia, Egypt, Israel, Japan, Jordan, Argentina, the Republic of Korea, and New Zealand, or Taiwan, if he determines and reports to the appropriate congressional committees that it is important to the national security interests of the United States to waive such prohibition.
C. The President may, without prior notice to Congress, waive the prohibition of subsection A with respect to a particular country if he determines and reports to the appropriate congressional committees that such country has entered into an agreement with the United States pursuant to Article 98 of the Rome Statute, preventing the International Criminal Court from proceeding against United States personnel present in such country.
D. The prohibition of this section shall not apply to countries otherwise eligible for assistance under the Millennium Challenge Act of 2003, notwithstanding Section 606A2B of such act.
The Nethercutt Amendment differs from American Service Members Protection Act, ASPA, another anti-ICC legislation piece, by adding economic aid cutoffs to ASPA cuts in military aid. Cutting economic assistance is a far more damaging act because in many countries it directly affects the lives of their people.
In addition, existing status of forces agreements and other bilateral agreements already provide full U.S. jurisdiction over U.S. personnel and officials serving abroad.
What the Nethercutt Amendment does is exempt all U.S. nationals and contractors with the U.S. from accountability for widespread and systematic war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide committed on the territory of a signatory country.
Many countries who have refused to sign bilateral immunity agreements are wary of exempting individuals on their territory who are neither working for the U.S. government or military.
The amendment threatens to hurt key relationships with allies helping the U.S. fight the global war on terrorism. Numerous countries would be affected, including Jordan. The amendment would withhold $250 million intended to help promote economic growth and support healthcare, education, and governance reforms from one of our strongest allies in the Middle East.
Jordan, whose UN ambassador is also the president of the ICC's Assembly of States Parties, firmly believes that it cannot sign a bilateral immunity agreement that would put it in breach of the ICC treaty.
Ecuador, Paraguay, Bolivia, Peru, and Venezuela. The amendment would cancel $32.5 million in support for these countries intended to, quote, pursue justice sector reform, strengthen democratic institutions, and promote the rule of law, facilitate implementation of free trade agreements, improve local governance and promote decentralization, fight corruption, and promote respect for human rights, unquote. An additional $4 million would be withheld from the Peru-Ecuador Peace Initiative. These countries have already lost millions in military aid because they have chosen to uphold their legal commitment to the ICC. For fiscal year 2004, military aid withheld includes $15.65 million for Ecuador, $2.7 million for Peru, and hundreds of thousands for Venezuela and Paraguay.
Caribbean states, including Barbados, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and Trinidad and Tobago, would lose funds appropriated for the Third Border Initiative, a $9 million project, which improves immigration systems and border security and funds disaster preparedness and coordination exercises. These three countries have also seen their military aid withheld. Trinidad and Tobago, which was instrumental in the creation of the ICC and now has a judge on the court, has made very clear that its hands are tied legally.
South Africa, an important strategic U.S. ally in the region, South Africa has already forfeited $7.6 million in military aid because of its strong support for the ICC. This amendment would withhold millions more from South Africa that is intended to fund anti-terrorism training, as well as enhance trade and private sector development and promote human rights. South Africa has a judge currently serving on the court.
Ireland. This amendment would cancel $8.5 million to promote peace in Northern Ireland. It also deletes the $3.5 million Walsh visa program. Ireland also has a judge presently serving at the ICC. The European Union concluded that no European Union country could legally sign a bilateral immunity agreement as proposed by the U.S. because it would put them in breach of their legal commitments under the ICC's treaty. No EU country has publicly signed an agreement. All but one EU country, the Czech Republic, are full members of the ICC and thus would be ineligible for economic support fund monies under this amendment.
Cyprus. Cyprus will lose $13.5 million intended to further its peace process. The former president of the Cypriot Supreme Court is now a judge at the ICC. This measure targets democracies that uphold the rule of law and work alongside the U.S. to further our foreign policy priorities. We should not be punishing them over unnecessary agreements that fail to provide any additional protection for our troops above and beyond what they already have through existing status of forces agreements and status of mission agreements.
According to the American Non-Governmental Organizations Coalition for the International Criminal Court in the U.S. Congress, while there are very few vocal members adamantly opposed to the ICC and international obligations in general, most negative votes have arisen because members lack information, have been swayed by disinformation, or see the court as low priority.
Those who oppose the court have many of the same concerns as the administration, but are also guided by their belief in American exceptionalism and their perception that the ICC violates U.S. sovereignty.
Among some people, there is a strong feeling that it just isn't right for the U.S. to use extra-constitutional means to participate in creating a foreign court, even if there is no legal bar to its doing so.
Action taken against the ICC and Congress have included a provision from the 106th Congress that prevented U.S. funding in support of the ICC and extradition to the Court of U.S. Nationals and Contractors.
Two anti-ICC amendments passed the 107th session of Congress, preventing the use of funds to provide support or other assistance to the ICC or any criminal investigation by the court.
Another anti-ICC amendment passed the 108th Congress, which cuts economic assistance to states' parties to the ICC and have not entered into an immunity agreement with the U.S.
The president's signing statements for both 2002 amendments said that he would interpret them consistently with his foreign affairs powers. This does not mean, however, that these provisions have had no impact.
For instance, these laws may have helped bolster the anti-ICC opposition to put pressure on the administration not to participate in the final ICC negotiations, and may be used to keep the U.S. from becoming an observer in the Assembly of States parties, or to prevent U.S. cooperation with the court on a case-by-case basis as is called for by the Dodd Amendment and the American Service Members Protection Act, ASPA.
Additionally, the cuts in military and economic assistance to countries in support of the ICC threatens the pace of ratification of the court's statute worldwide, as countries will fear being in conflict with their obligations to the court and their obligations under a bilateral immunity agreement with the U.S.
The American Service Members Protection Act, ASPA, provisions include, subject to full waivers at the discretion of the president, prohibition on cooperation with the International Criminal Court, restrictions on U.S. participation in UN peacekeeping operations, prohibition on direct or indirect transfer of classified national security information, including law enforcement information, to the International Criminal Court, even if no American is accused of a crime, prohibition of U.S. military assistance to parties to the International Criminal Court, and pre-authorized authority to free members of the armed forces of the U.S. and certain other persons detained or imprisoned by or on behalf of the International Criminal Court, the Hague Invasion Clause.
The Act is an odd and tortured piece of legislation whose impact is hard to assess. Although the Act contains authority for the President to waive most of its requirements, its adoption is nevertheless a strong psychological and symbolic statement against the Court, and is already alienating our friends and allies whom we are asking to help us with our anti-terrorist coalition.
It is the outcome of several contradictory forces, a determination shared with the administration by House and Senate leadership to make a strong statement of ideological hostility to the ICC, the administration's resolve to preserve in full the president's constitutional powers in international relations, and some congressional resistance to the act, especially in the Senate.
ASPA can best be understood as three stacked layers. The first is the original text that gave the president a very few, limited waivers, mostly for sanctions on friendly countries. The second layer, dropped right on the first, consists of waivers at the will of the president on all of the operative provisions of the bill. The administration insisted on these to protect the president's constitutional privileges. The last layer on top of the stack was language added by Senator Dodd that essentially reverses the effect of ASPA by authorizing the U.S. government to participate in a wide range of international justice efforts. Quote, "Nothing in this title shall prohibit the United States from rendering assistance to international efforts to bring to justice Saddam Hussein, Slobodan Milosevic, Osama bin Laden, leaders of Islamic Jihad, and other foreign nationals accused of genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity."
In the international arena itself, the Bush administration has been conducting a vigorous campaign of trying to conclude bilateral international agreements that will remove U.S. nationals from the reach of the court.
The administration claims that these agreements meet the requirements of Article 98(2) of the ICC statute. That article reads, "The court may not proceed with a request for surrender which would require the requested state to act inconsistently with its obligations under international agreements pursuant to which the consent of a sending state is required to surrender a person of that state to the court, unless the court can first obtain the cooperation of the sending state for the giving of consent for the surrender."
The United States is pressing on countries a draft text that would prevent them from delivering many of a broad group of persons, including both U.S. and non-U.S. nationals, to the ICC. Persons are defined in the agreement as, quote, "current or former government officials, employees, including contractors, or military personnel or nationals of one party."
The U.S. says that this agreement is authorized by Article 98(2) of the ICC Treaty. In fact, 98(2) only addresses treaties between countries covering persons that they have sent to each other on official business. The article's wording explicitly requires the existence of a sending state relationship, such as when U.S. military and civilian personnel are sent to a receiving state by the U.S. government pursuant to status of forces or status of mission agreements, SOFAs or SOMAs.
Such treaties often say that if such a person commits a crime in a country where he or she has been sent, he or she is to be returned to the sending country.
The agreement the United States wants is not about the conduct of official business. It applies to any of a wide variety of persons who may be on the territory of either party for any purpose at any time.
The Rome Statute does therefore not authorize this agreement, and countries adhering to it will violate their obligations to the court under the statute. According to the Coalition for the International Criminal Court, as of December 1, 2004, the U.S. State Department reports over 90 agreements of this type. Only about 25% of these agreements have been ratified by Parliament or signed as an executive agreement. In fact, many legal experts argue that the executive agreements are unconstitutional and require the approval of Parliament and are thus not valid agreements.
Furthermore, about two-thirds of states' parties have resisted signing bilateral international agreements, despite large economic penalties imposed by the U.S., and 45 countries continue to publicly refuse to sign.
Recently, the U.S. has also deployed its anti-ICC efforts before the UN General Assembly.
As the American Non-Governmental Organizations Coalition for the ICC reports, on October 14, 2004, the General Assembly's Sixth Committee, Legal, discussed the start of judicial functioning of the ICC.
Delegates discussed the first two cases, Democratic Republic of Congo and Northern Uganda, the Victims Trust Fund, the court's jurisdiction, its relationship with the Security Council, among other items.
Nicholas Rostow, the U.S. representative, reiterated the U.S. objections to the court, insisting on the existence of bipartisan national consensus on the issue, where both parties in Congress voted for the American Service Members Protection Act.
He furthered that no U.N. funds could be used for the court except on a reimbursable basis, since Congress stipulated that none of its funds could be used to support the court. On November 19, 2004, in the face of U.S. attempts to have the ICC taken off the U.N. General Assembly agenda, the Sixth Committee unanimously passed its resolution and corrigendum on the ICC without a vote.
The resolution calls upon states not yet parties to the Rome Statute to consider ratifying the statute, provides that the ICC may attend and participate in the work of the GA as an observer, may submit reports on its activities to the GA, and will be on the agenda of the GA plenary from next year on.
Rather than face a lost vote and heated confrontation with many of its key allies, the U.S. did not call for a vote, as they had been threatening to do, but did not join the consensus. Providing an explanation of the U.S. position, Eric Rosend, legal advisor, said the U.S. could not join the consensus as the U.S. opposition to the Rome Statute remained clear and unchanged. The danger of politically motivated prosecutions was of deep concern. Nothing about the court's structure provided assurance against political trials.
The court was an institution of unchecked power, with its authority unconstrained by adequate checks or balances. The Rome Statute also provided insufficient opportunity for Security Council oversight, and hence the U.S. could not support the court.
Further, he said the court was an independent body with its own separate states' parties. The relationship agreement between it and the General Assembly did not bind states who were non-parties to the court with regard to the financial implications of the court's activities.
Full reimbursement of all expenses incurred by the United Nations on behalf of the court was required. Also, agreements had been signed between his country and 96 nations to ensure that United States citizens and military personnel would not be surrendered to the court.
Finally, while the U.S. respected the right of states to become parties to the Rome Statute, the decision not to be a party should also be respected.
In explanation of its position after the action, Canada's representative said approval of the resolution sent a strong message about the court's important role in eliminating impunity for the worst crimes.
The concerns of those who were not states' parties were misguided due to the ICC's legitimate and necessary role in the international legal system. Undermining the court sent the wrong message as a signal to the forces of impunity.
The General Assembly adopted the resolution on December 2, 2004. The U.S. delegation dissociated itself from consensus on the resolution.
The European Union followed with a statement in support of the court as, quote, beyond doubt, the most significant recent development in the long struggle to advance the cause of justice and rule of law, thereby eradicating impunity, unquote.
The EU continued to state that concerns about the court were unfounded and reaffirmed the EU guidelines on bilateral immunity agreements, in which the EU foreign ministers said that entering into U.S. agreements, quote, would be inconsistent with ICC states' parties' obligations with respect to the ICC statute and may be inconsistent with other international agreements to which ICC states' parties are parties.
On December 9, 2004, the Dutch European Union Presidency made public its declaration on the Nethercutt Amendment. Its text reads as follows.
The European Union deeply regrets that the U.S. Omnibus Appropriations Bill of 2005, adopted by the U.S. Senate on December 7th, included the so-called Nethercutt Amendment.
This amendment prohibits funds from the U.S. Economic Support Fund to be made available to countries party to the International Criminal Court, which have not entered into a so-called, quote, bilateral non-surrender agreement, unquote, with the U.S.
The EU urges President Bush to make full use of the waiver powers he has under the amendment.
The EU reiterates that any bilateral non-surrender agreement that were to be concluded should, by respecting the legal obligations of sovereign nations party to the Rome Statute, preserve the integrity of the Rome Statute.
The EU refers to its guiding principles concerning arrangements between a state party to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court and the United States regarding the conditions to surrender of persons to the court, adopted on September 30, 2002.
The candidate countries Bulgaria, Romania, and Croatia, and the EFTA countries Liechtenstein and Norway, members of the European Economic Area, aligned themselves with this declaration.
For further information on the International Criminal Court, you may visit Equipo Niscor's related webpage.
This information has been produced by Radio Niscor with information provided by the American Non-Governmental Organizations Coalition for the ICC and Citizens for Global Solutions.
It has been produced with the collaboration of the Shell Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School and edited and post-produced at our studios in Madrid on December 12, 2004.
You've been listening to Radio Niscor.